Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
Matt, we're finally recording in person.
Here we are. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's been... Have we recorded in person before?
No.
Wow.
I really don't think we have.
Wow. I hadn't even thought about that.
No.
Because obviously we've caught up in person, but yeah, this is the first time we've actually recorded in person.
That's it. And where are you?
No, that's not true.
No?
No, NDC.
Well, sorry, you are right. Yep. Well, funny you say that because we're recording in person again because we went to another conference yesterday.
We did, yeah. AdaConf. So I guess the trend is that we record remotely unless there's a conference and then we'll record in person.
Yeah, it's a good excuse to catch up.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've been looking forward to AdaConf for a while. And obviously that was yesterday.
Yeah.
What were your initial thoughts?
I'm still digesting it. I was furiously note-taking the whole day. In fact, I've got my notes in front of me. So there's seven talks that we went to. Well, seven talks that I took notes from. There was a couple of short ones that I didn't note anything down. But I've got seven talks worth of furious pages and pages of notes here. So it's going to take me a while to read back over those and digest them and probably write them up into something sensible just to help solidify that in my memory.
Mm-hmm.
But what are my thoughts? Well, it's funny though. So it was organized by Chris Simon and Sunil, who we were talking to yesterday, and they both asked me, you know, what I thought. And I said, it's interesting because, you know, I came in with expectations. I was expecting to enjoy it. I was expecting to learn a lot. I was expecting it to be a good day. And I wasn't disappointed.
Absolutely.
Those expectations were met.
Yeah.
It was one of the better conferences. I don't know. I mean, oftentimes you go to a conference and, you know, especially I guess when they're going over multiple days, there'll be times where you just got to sit something out and just take a break. But there was none of that yesterday.
No, absolutely not. And I don't know about you, but it's surprising to hear that for both of them, for Chris and Sunil, that was their first conference that they've organized.
I know. Yeah, amazing.
And you couldn't tell, could you?
No idea. It was meticulously run, professionally executed. Yep. Of course, they did have help from Alicia,
who
has got experience organizing conferences. But still, perfectly executed.
Yeah.
Slight mix-up with the volunteer shirts.
So we were walking around thinking we were going to stand out wearing bright yellow beer-driven desk shirts. And it just so happens that the volunteers that were there were wearing their mustard yellow shirts.
They thought exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
They thought if we make the shirts yellow, they'll stand out easily. So
that's right.
Great minds, I guess. So we walked in and they looked at us and we looked at them and we thought, you guys are going to have to leave. And get you.
It's funny, I was talking to Alicia. She's like, it's kind of like when you wear the same outfit as the bridesmaids at your wedding.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I've never had that problem, but I see where you're coming from.
I have. No.
But yes, but that was good.
It was a day of, I mean, obviously the topic is analysis, design and architecture.
Yeah.
But one thing that we've both commented on that was actually mind-blowing when you think about the coordination that's gone into it is that there was themes that wove throughout the day.
Yeah.
And all the talks were very diverse and about very different topics, but they all kind of were following the same thread, the same theme, which was decision-making.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I wouldn't say that I haven't thought about decision-making before. I have, but I've certainly never broken it down, analyzed it and put the level of thinking into it. I mean, I just didn't realize there was that much.
No, and everyone I spoke to afterwards, especially after Sonia's keynote, was sort of saying, how awesome is it to have a framework for decision-making?
Yeah, it's like fantastic.
A takeaway that you can take away back into the office and actually start applying that to your day-to-day work.
Yeah. And that's, funnily enough, for a conference that is hands-off, the ability to just take something away and go back to work and actually put something into practice that
and
you learn.
You can implement it tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Or Monday, I should say.
I can. I've written down a lot of notes.
I should say Monday, not tomorrow.
Yeah, Monday, of course, yeah. Yeah, that keynote, so in general, as I said, really opened my eyes to the level of thinking that has gone into understanding decision making.
Yep.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of literature and a lot of research around it that these people kind of shared their knowledge on, which was amazing. That keynote, I think I spoke to you at the time, I sat there, you know, I was writing notes furiously. And I sat there just thinking, I just agree, which is agreeing with everything that she was saying.
Oh, you made that comment right at the very end when she was asking for questions. And you said, I did have a lot of questions, but every time I was about to ask them, you answered them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So as she was, obviously didn't want to interrupt, but as she was talking, I kept writing down questions. And then, you know, a couple of minutes later, she'd answer it, answer them. So I, at the end, I had no questions. And then, as I said, I was agreeing with everything that she was saying until she got to one point where she made a comment about intuition.
Yep.
And she showed this definition of it. And I looked at it and I thought, huh, that's the first thing that you've said that I don't agree with. And then she said, but that's not my definition. I think of it like this. And I was like, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. The very next slide, she corrected that definition.
Yeah. Her version. Actually, it wasn't the next slide.
Oh, wasn't it?
Because something that she did that I meant to ask her about this, she did these really cool animations where she was moving the words around.
Yes.
That was really effective. Yes. I loved that. Yeah.
It was a good transition. So that was the keynote.
Well, that was the first keynote.
That was the first keynote. And sort of speaking of threads, it was awesome to see that the keynote at the end, which I've often heard it called a lock note. So the keynote, the lock note.
Yeah.
But they had the common thread.
Yeah.
And you could tell from an organizational point of view that it was extremely intentional the way that they had those two keynotes starting and tying up the entire conference. And I thought that was, it just showed that little extra attention to detail, which I don't think I've seen at other conferences.
No, I've never seen that. I mean, you know, you obviously get conferences that are on a topic. And I mean, I guess the concept of analysis, design and architecture is quite broad. But, you know, often you might go to a conference that is, what you know, like DDD, which I haven't actually been to. But, or, you know, I mean, other conferences you go to and there is, you know, it's on a specific topic. But this was literally a theme, a thread that was woven through every single talk. And the thing that's really interesting is the coordination that an orchestration that has gone into that from the organizers.
Yeah,
clearly is impressive, but all of the speakers as well, you know, were aware of it. And we could see from, you know, the statements they were making throughout the day and saying as much directly that they had coordinated with each other as well.
Absolutely.
And they had kind of, they'd all, or some of them at least, had shared with each other what topics they were talking about.
Yep.
And some of them riffed off each other.
Yeah.
And they had planned that and prepared it. It was spectacular.
Like I said, like you could tell how organized it was. And it was polished, but not clinical, not sterile. It was still polished and it was really, really well done. So after Sonia's talk was Ross's.
Yeah, Ross McIntyre.
You'll have to correct me on this. What was it? Socio-technical teams?
Open socio-technical systems.
There you go. Open socio-technical systems. Which beforehand, you know, you and I were talking. I was like, not sure about that one, but you put me in my place and you said, basically you said, hold your breath and just wait till. Yeah, hold your comments and wait until the
talk I said comes it up. Might surprise you. Yeah,
pretty much, and it did.
Yeah,
that was a really good talk too.
It was great. Yeah, we caught up with him afterwards and had a bit of a chat with him.
Yeah, and you know, Ross, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on. The chat we had afterwards was amazing. Like you just see his passion for everything that he wanted to convey, everything he was talking about, his work. You could just see it come out in the way he's talking, and
yeah.
There was no smoke and mirrors there. It was him wearing his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah, yeah.
But from a speaker's point of view, how did you find today?
I really liked it. I think I've been to quite a lot of conferences. I've presented at many of them. But I think today it was fresh for me. The crowd's probably different from what I'm used to. But everyone's smart and they're switched on and they're doing real work.
Yep.
And so everything's like my experience, this is what we've learned. And that's really kind of refreshing.
Yep.
And the quality of the discussion and the ideas is a lot higher than maybe.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. And your talk on socio-technology teams, is that?
Socio-technical systems.
Socio-technical systems, there you go.
I think one of the things is I knew, because it's software and architecture focused, that there's a different perspective.
Yep.
And I've come from a software development background, but I'm in a different area these days.
Yeah.
And that's because, while software was awesome, I kind of felt that the system was letting down.
Oh,
software developers, engineers, architects.
Absolutely.
So, like, my kind of mission was like, well, what systems appreciate and value the skills that people in these things have? And so that kind of led me on an odyssey outside of software development to say, well, if it's the shape of the organization, what would that mean? And importantly, whilst the socio-technical stuff is quite current in architecture circles talking about it, like, it's okay to talk about open systems and socio-technical architectures, but what's the logical endpoint of that? And so to be able to talk about companies like Hire and say, this isn't a pipe dream, this is a reality. This is achievable. And it's not a small tomato processing company, or a big tomato processing company, or a anarchist bus collective in Barcelona. This is a manufacturing company. It's the world's number one white goods company, and it is different. So, like, stretching people's ideas of what's possible is probably why I'm here. So it's not unusual for me to do this talk and people just sit in silence in the end, because they go, well,
it's possible,
what does that mean? And I've got questions, you know. So it's good, and people jumped in.
So he's talking a lot about open systems theory, and which I'm, you know, keen to read more around.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's talking a lot about open systems theory, open socio-technical systems, but he kind of wrapped up with these case studies, right, of two different organizations.
Yeah, yeah, amazing.
And everyone, like, all of our ears pricked up, and everyone kind of just zeroed in on that.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm talking about all of this. I'm like, yeah, but tell us more about this.
But how does that work in the real world, right? Like, what you're talking about, it doesn't work.
It's funny. Yeah, it's funny because people just could not compute. Yep. That can't work. And he's like, but it does. Because
it does.
This is real.
And
this is not something.
An organization of, 16,000 or more people.
So he talks. So the two organizations that he talks about, one was called Birdsorg. Is it Norway?
I think they're a Norwegian healthcare provider.
Yeah, maybe. Is it aged care?
Aged care, maybe.
Yeah. And the other one is Hire, which is a Chinese white goods manufacturer.
Yep. Who basically own all the major white goods.
GE appliances.
All the appliances Bosch, that we're familiar with. Yep.
Yeah. And he said that the way that they're structured is 3,000 autonomous teams.
Yeah.
And he described how that works and how they're basically micro enterprises, they call them. The self-determination, like, some of the stats that they've got 50% internal startup success, which is unheard of.
Absolutely.
It's like, so yeah, so we'll get him on and we'll definitely talk more around that.
Yeah, definitely. And
yeah, I've got notes.
Sorry, you got endless notes.
Yeah. So the next one that I want to talk about was the talk by Allison. Do you remember this one on No Regrets Architectural Decisions?
Yes. Yeah.
So I think at one point quite early in that talk, I laughed very loudly. I think probably
were the only one that did.
I definitely think a few people did. Yeah, a few people would have been. But I was a bit self-conscious because I literally burst out. I literally laughed out loud.
Yep.
She was talking about an architecture that she was showing. And I have to say, she said, you know, we're all architects in the room. This is probably raising some concerns or red flags for people. Actually, I thought it was fine, personally.
Yes.
And, you know, and especially within the context of the talks that we'd seen first, which is about framing, you know, problem statements and everything else, like, without anything to explicitly tell us why that architecture was wrong.
It solved the problem.
It was fine. Exactly. It solved the problem. But anyway, you can see how, irrespective of that, there was definitely some, I wouldn't say shortcuts, but there was definitely some things that were done that not the way that they would be done now. This was back in 2012, maybe.
Yeah. So I think 14, yeah.
Yeah. So I laughed out loud because she was, you know, saying these are the reasons why we did it. And she puts this slide on where it says the solution was temporary.
Yes.
And that's when I laughed because we've all seen that.
We've all seen that. And that's, here's the proof of concept that, you know, ends up going straight to prod, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then 12 years later, it's like, shit, is that thing still running?
And what was that slide that came up in a later talk, which is that famous XKCD cartoon, which is like
modern
infrastructure
and
one library.
Written by some random dev in Nebraska. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah. I really loved what she was saying about what she describes as experience layer architecture.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, maybe we'll have an opportunity to get her on and
I think so.
Get, in fact, we actually had the opportunity to get a little bit more of her thoughts yesterday as well.
Alison, a couple of questions for you. First of all, thank you so much for your talk. It was incredibly insightful and eye-opening, and I really, really enjoyed it. I do have one question. What was wrong with that first architecture that you showed?
You know, I don't really think there was anything that wrong with it. So for your listeners, we fronted a couple of S3 buckets with our kind of content distribution network. And when we proposed that to Amazon, they said, you are crazy. But S3 is actually quite an engineering marvel, right? Multi-region, scalability, multiple nines, did the job. And it was meant to last 6 months, lasted a good 6 years. So wasn't that bad.
So Liam's chuckling because when you put up the slide that said it was supposed to be a short-term solution, I literally physically laughed out loud.
I think half the audience did.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
Look, I thought 6 months was a bit unlikely, but I thought 1 year, 2 years tops. But stood the test of time, but I am glad that it was actually switched off because you know how it is with replatforms. You tend to have the new thing and the old thing, but it's gone.
What were your thoughts on the rest of the day?
It's been absolutely phenomenal. I didn't know what to expect. I thought, you know, a day on architecture could just be anything, and it really exceeded all my expectations. I think there was this consistent thread. The speakers were just amazing. So many international speakers and local speakers. The food was amazing. I just wish more members of my team came along this year. They'll certainly be here next year. I'll make sure of that.
Yeah. At least they'll be able to see the recordings, right?
Yeah, 100%. I'll be dropping that on our Slack channels when I get back to work.
It was really great. Just talking about the theme and the consistent theme, it was really great to see, you know, really a whole day of essentially decision-making. It's really great.
Credit to the organisers for that one.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I really like the last talk on power because I do find this with a lot of... There's this learned helplessness at the moment of I'm stuck in this situation and the context and the org, but really... Teams have got a lot of power and they are knowledge workers, and so you should really speak up for the things that you believe in, and if it's in pursuit of customer value, you'd really be surprised. You know, people want to hear what you've got to say.
So would you say there are any takeaways today that surprised you? Anything that kind of made you think something you hadn't necessarily thought before?
Yeah, I've got a reading list as long as your arm. I think I need to go buy about 6 or 10 books. I think Christmas is sorted, thank goodness. I think for me, I'd like to learn a few more models. I find some of those frameworks really, really helpful because you can explain them to people and explain how you're using them. So taking a bit more structure with some of my approaches is good. And I think I want to just encourage people to get out and share their stories a little bit more as well, because lots of speakers I'd never heard before today, and it was fascinating. Yeah, really just...
So, looking forward to next year and coming back with your team.
Yes, absolutely. Looking forward to next year.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for sponsoring.
So, I guess we skipped over Arjun's lightning talk. That was a quick lightning talk that Arjun managed to squeeze. I believe it's a longer talk of his that he's cut down to 10 minutes. So,
I felt that there was a lot more. There was definitely a lot more to that than what we got.
There was more to that story than what we got. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, I think because... You and I were talking just this morning, right? You studied at university, what was it, science fiction writing?
Not science fiction writing, no.
No?
No, I studied, my degree title was science and science fiction.
Science and science fiction.
But it wasn't science fiction writing. Oh, okay. It was history and philosophy of science using science fiction as a lens.
But I was just trying to use that as a bit of a segue because obviously, right, the idea of the story, you know, the hero's journey, you've got the protagonist, the antagonist.
Yes.
Right. And that's how he framed his crowd design journey.
Yeah.
And I just thought that may tie back into sort of your studies from way back when.
No.
No, no, absolutely not.
No, not really. Because he was using a different classic story form than the hero's journey. So no, not in that respect, different story. But I tell you one thing that stood out to me, because of course he introduces it and he's like, I'm going to tell this story about cloud design and let me introduce the hero. So, of course, we all immediately assumed, no, that's not fair. I immediately assumed, and I assumed everyone else thought the same thing, that the hero is going to be the architect, right?
Yeah.
Well, but no, the hero is the application.
Yep. Yes. No, I think it's a pretty relatively safe assumption, because I made the same assumption.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe we can track down the full length version of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, I think flight's about to start boarding, so I guess we can either pick up later or we can sort of quickly rush through the rest of the afternoon.
What time is it now?
We're going to take 20 minutes.
Let's just talk quickly about one more talk, because I think it's one of my favorite
all-time favorite conference talks, Preventing EMU Wars with Domain-Driven Design. I love that talk.
What a great title.
It's an awesome title. It gets you, it catches you in, and Lee's presentation style is amazing.
Yeah.
And for anyone that obviously hasn't had the opportunity to see the talk, all these talks from AdaConf will be online. I urge you to actually see that one. Just his presentation style, right? It's a technical idea, technical concept that could easily be loaded with code snippets and examples here, left, right, and center. And if you actually go through his slide deck, there is zero code in it. And it's pseudocode written in emojis.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's a really good, and the way his presentation style. And again, if you see the video, believe it or not, that's the second time Lee has ever presented.
Really?
Yeah.
So he's just did it the one time you saw it.
The first time was at the user group.
Yeah.
And not presented that talk. His first time ever presenting anything was at the user group. His second time and his first ever conference talk was yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You couldn't tell.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that he's a professional stand-up comedian.
Yeah. It's the way he tells the story, the way he presents. And I mean, the artwork in his slides done by his partner, that's just amazing.
It's spectacular, isn't it? Yeah.
And it just catches you. And there was no coincidence that Chris put him on after lunch.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that goes to the understanding the overall design of the conference, right? And the thought that went into planning.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, we better get on this plane.
That's it.
So I guess we'll do the first half of this recording in Victoria and the second half in New South Wales.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. See you on the other side. Okay.
Thanks, Matt.
So we're just at the tail end of AdaConf, and we are here with Sunil and Alison. First of all, thank you both so much for amazing sessions today.
No problem at all. Yeah, thank you both for coming down to our conference, flying down from Sydney.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you. Sunil, I just want to ask you, you've obviously organized this conference. How are you feeling now that it's all over?
A lot of emotions, a lot of positive emotions. I'm not able to name one. I guess I'm feeling happy, overwhelmed. I'm feeling like it's been a great day. So, yeah, just a lot of very nice, positive things.
From my perspective, it's been fantastic, and I'm just so glad you organized it. I'm really looking forward to next year as well.
We're looking to next year too. Yeah. Did I just say we're looking to next year? We're looking forward to next year too.
So I've got Chris here from AdaConf, co-organizer.
You too. How are you? How's it going?
Good, thanks. Good to see you again.
Yeah, likewise.
How's the morning been so far?
It's been fantastic. I mean, such a great energy here. With so many people come and say how much they've really enjoyed the talks, like right from the opening keynote by Sonia and others. It was
amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah. So many actionable, like really practical advice.
I know. I've got a lot of takeaways I'm taking home and trying to action. Pretty much straight away.
Excellent.
A lot of things. And, you kind of need to do, but you kind of forget about it until someone just explains it to you like that.
Yeah. And
you're
like, and it's just so clearly presented. It's a beautiful thing about it.
It was really good.
And then we had Ross McIntyre from Open Systems, and that's a real passion of mine.
Yeah.
I think there's just, so many organizations would benefit from it. It's actually really at the heart of the mission of the conference, right? So what we're saying the mission is it's about sort of software that's more valuable for its users and owners, more collaborative in its conception and design, and more pleasant for its builders and maintainers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you can have all three. And actually, it'll be more pleasant for the developers if they get to collaborate in the conception and ideation of the software and the design of it.
Absolutely.
And it actually creates more valuable software.
Absolutely.
And I think so many organizations are stuck in a thing where they're in tension with each other. And it doesn't have to be. I think a lot of what Ross was talking about, open social systems, it's open social technical systems, is at the heart of that.
Do you feel that could be a hangover from the old waterfall days?
Maybe a little bit, but I think more waterfall and what we currently see are both symptoms of the same fundamental underlying cultural problem, which is the command and control hierarchy.
Yep.
So much is about not letting go of control.
Yeah.
And so much of what we're saying is actually just let go of a bit of control and trust people, and actually it'll be better for you, better for us.
Yeah.
And we can collaborate rather than it being, you know, this sort of very top-down way of working.
And then after that was it Alison's talk?
Yeah. Well, no, so, yeah, then we had Ahun talking about cloud design as a story.
Yes, oh, that's right.
Nice little lightning talk.
Yes, yeah.
To break things up about, you know, using some of the tropes from how do you tell stories, how do you write novels?
Yep.
To, you know, translating that, how do you think about system design?
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got your protagonist and antagonist, and you've got your goal and your setbacks, and, you know, it's
The hero's journey.
The hero's journey of systems. I really like this cute little way of thinking about it. And then we had Alice do a No Regrets Architectural Decisions. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a great wealth of experience she has.
Yes.
20-plus years in the industry, being able to say, look, I did this, and I would never regret it.
Yep.
You know, like, here we go at the end, say, like, one of my no regrets is introducing continuous deployment.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm in agreement there. But just also the way she talked about the frameworks that they adopted and how they thought about things.
I was gonna say, and that one of the last points she made at the very end was she actually doesn't regret every decision she made.
Yeah.
Because it was the right decision at the time.
Yeah, even if the outcome wasn't great.
Exactly. Yeah. And I really loved how she could sort of come up and say that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think there's a lot of times you look at it these days and you think, God, I wish I had done something differently. Yeah. But you need to remember.
You're evaluating against the context you read.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then we had the panel.
The panel. And that was amazing too. I really, really liked that because I've been part of some rebuilds.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of on the legacy side at the moment while there's a rebuild project going over on the statics. It's interesting to hear these ideas.
War stories, we could have talked about that for so much longer.
Yeah. And I was just saying to Paul just before, I remember talking to you at NDC, and it always sticks with me. You're like, I like to just focus on the always be modernising a product.
Yeah, yeah.
Just constantly keep refactoring. Just keep.
Well, and I kind of reiterated that today. You did.
And I walked out of there and I thought, one of the heuristics I could use, I think, is looking at it thinking, when you're weighing up that decision, are we doing the rewrite or not? It's kind of thinking, is it cheaper to rebuild or to pay down your tech debt?
Yeah. I think certainly you can get to a point where that is a really hard decision to make, but where the right decision is to rebuild.
Yeah, because your tech debt's insurmountable. But like you said, if you're constantly refactoring, constantly modernizing, you can actually keep on top of that tech
debt. But it does require you to be on top of it from the start.
Yes.
And most places aren't that.
Absolutely.
But I think the reason I talk about it is like, don't restart the journey without most of that, at least in the rebuild race,
incorporating
what you learn as you go, because then it reduces your probability of ending up back there again in the future. Although I think Bridget has some great points about, you know, and I think her like lived experience working in a range of like enterprise and government and multinational organizations speaks to just the pragmatic reality of the fact that no matter how hard you try it, shit happens sometimes, and you're going to have the vendor that's just turning off a product,
exactly,
or you know, some massive strategic pivotal shift at the top thing that you can never prepare for. So you know, it's you got to be realistic about these things. So I like it was great to have her balance my idealism with her realism.
That's it, and that's why we come to these conferences, right?
Yeah.
So you can have these conversations. You can meet everyone who's got their own experiences.
Yeah, and it's like I said, Pakriti's experience here as well. Like she's in the middle of a rebuild at CultureAmp. You know, they're doing it progressively, but they can't do it in too fine grained a set because there's some other constraints that they have.
Yeah.
So it's a nice balance between those perspectives. And what I really loved about hers was actually the lived experience of not just the doing the rebuild, but everything that went up to justifying it. You know, all the things they did to convince everybody this is actually the right decision. Like they didn't just say, we want to toss the dummy out of the pram with the legacy system. They tried really hard.
To embrace the legacy, to work
with it. To refactor it slowly, to do incremental change. And they were able to demonstrate, because they had the data, and contrasted that with the future strategic direction of the business, that this was the right thing to do. I think that's a really sound approach.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
you do find people going, just toss it out because I don't like it. You know, and, well, you should be a little bit more mature than that in your decision
making. Yeah, no, I completely agree. Well, Chris, I'll let you get back to running the show.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
And thanks for having us down here.
Catch up with you again.
Great to see you. G'day, Paul. It's Liam here from Beer Driven Devs at ADA Conf in Melbourne. How are you finding the conference so far?
Yeah, it's it's been an interesting experience so far. I probably wasn't expected to be so architecture-focused, but it's been a really great reminder working on a small startup about really good practices that exist in the industry that we kind of forget about. When you're doing things so lean, you tend to just go, everything has to be lightweight. But in doing so, you end up reinventing the wheel about a bunch of things. And so sitting back and saying, hey, we've got people whose whole jobs are doing this one piece of like decision-making or thinking about refactoring, like you start to really realize how much you know, how far we've come as an industry.
Yep.
And how much we should be leaning on that and not throwing it all out when we're just going, you know, we've got to do things quick and dirty.
Yeah, so I guess it's lunchtime now. What's been your highlight this morning so far?
I think the keynote and the panel discussions touched me the most. The keynote talking about decision making, that's a point dear to my heart. As a small startup, like, we're constantly making decisions, right? And what I see my devs doing is they're having to justify their decisions to me, and we try and make it as lightweight as possible, but they have to, you know, a little bit of framework would really help that go a long way to making things easier.
It's a tough balance, isn't it?
It is, right? Like you don't want a change control committee when you've got a team. We're an engineering team of sort of 12 engineers and plus a few, you know, managers and stuff.
And you got the regular challenges of a startup, and
but everyone talks. So we don't need a big change management committee. But what we do need is maybe some better templates around this stuff. I think the thing that we miss that took me this morning is really that decision maker, your evaluation criteria. I think we miss that a lot about design docs that we talk about. Just going, before I even look at the options, how are they going to decide which is the right one? I think that's something I want to take back.
Yeah, I saw that too, and that's that was one of my big takeaways. Like, you know, we've got our decision register, but then you don't realize all that extra work and that framework that happens before really builds up to that decision register.
Yeah.
And it makes it a lot easier to actually get, I guess, document it and to have it in place if you've got that framework from the beginning.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
It's a standard as well. So if you're looking back on them, you kind of see, all right, we're kind of fairly evaluating things in the same kind of way, where I think we've only got a few teams, but all the teams are probably doing a little bit differently in the moment. We probably put in the structure.
Yeah, I'm the same. I took that as a massive takeaway from that keynote. That was awesome.
Yeah. I think the last one, we're talking about rebuilding and versus refactoring.
Yep.
I think, you know, again, been, you know, I've seen a bit of both in the time, but being this small startup at the moment, rebuilding is not really an issue.
Yep.
But that really touched me. What was his name? The gentleman on stage who was part of the panel.
The one on the right? Chris?
Chris, yeah. Yep. Yeah. And he was talking about, like, well, can we just have a culture of constantly refactoring so that rebuild isn't really a thing because we're always rebuilding? And I love that. I think we kind of do a little bit of that. We've got a really great culture. We've got a great CTO who kind of encourages that anyway. And I wonder if, you know, I was touched by that, like, if you haven't done a refactor in the last however many months, then, you know, you're already about legacy. I'm like, we really haven't, but then at the same time, we probably are refactoring, we just don't call it that. Like, we're constantly evolving, we're constantly, you know, we did a big switch from Go to TypeScript not long ago, and that was sort of for so many companies, it'd be a mass decision. It kind of happened in a week for us, and then we just got on with it.
Yeah, no.
So maybe that's happening, and maybe we could be more deliberate about continuous refactoring. I was reflecting on that with my old manager from, we used to work at PageUp together a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
And PageUp really had that struggle. You know, this was probably 10 years ago when we were working there, and they still have the struggle at the moment of just this big, large monolith and trying to break it apart. You know, we came up with good triangular patterns and we had microservices, but the reality was so much of the business logic and so much of the, like, what customers really valued and the features they were added, we're in the monolith, they're trying to put on them with such a problem. And we were reflecting on it, saying, actually, like, apparently they'd had feedback at a time that, like, from some consultants said, like, this is not salvageable, you guys should really rebuild. And, like, they were very much in a rebuild's a dirty word, we're going to repair the airplane while still flying. And that's been the approach to date. But I wonder if rebuilding is the right scenario in that case, because it sounds like they still haven't got out of that stage of where disruptors are coming up and delivering features to market faster than they could. So they're getting, you know, it's a real business problem. And there was another point that seems to have come through a few of the talks this morning, which was about, like, engineering, like, flipping engineers engaged too. And there was a comment about, you know, you lose a good engineer, you probably lost, like, dropping a production database. I love it. And I think that gets lost a little bit too. And so, like, to your point there, like, if you're doing a big rebuild as well,
like, there's a whole lot of business factors. There's also engineering. It can be really boring and stuffy if you're just working on this project that's got a year long and it's there's no real like major challenges to solve. It's all just pumping it out.
Yeah.
Something that you know, our keynote talked about this morning was in your decision making and how does she put it? I mean, I'm going to butcher this completely, but she's like, you know, you've got to just have a vision for what that shiny object is, so that your engineers aren't getting distracted by the shiny. So if you've got to be able to be confident, you can keep selling what we're doing and why, and make it interesting for them too. Because otherwise, yeah, I've seen it so many times, they'll get distracted. I'm just going to play around with this bike on this, you know, AI project over here. And if you incorporate that into the project and where you want to go, it's going to be, you know,
better
outcomes. Yeah.
Well, Paul, that was awesome. I hope you enjoy your the rest of the conference here.
Thank you.
It was really nice to meet you, and we'll see you around.
Cheers.
So I'm still here at AdaConf, and it's turning out to be a great day so far. Today I'm here with Kelly. Hi, Kelly. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you, Matt.
Were you enjoying the day?
Yeah, having a great time.
Yeah, and I can't help noticing that you're not drinking a beer.
No, I've decided to go for the wines today, but my favourite beer is a peanut butter stout.
Is what, sorry?
A peanut butter stout.
Oh, wow. Peanut butter stout. That sounds amazing. I have to try that.
Yes,
I'm actually I'm a peanut butter fiend. And I have, we keep joking, I've got 2 cases of stout that I brewed at home that I need to get drunk. I brewed them for my mum, because she doesn't really drink at all, but she drinks stout. So I brewed 2 cases of it, and she ended up not coming to visit from the UK, so I'm just going to have to drink it.
Well, if you want, I'll send you my address, you can send them to me.
Someone's got to drink them, right?
That's right.
So I'm really keen to hear what your thoughts are. What was your highlight?
Emu Walls was definitely a highlight, but I think something I liked about the sessions this afternoon is how I got takeaways that related to each other and they kind of crossed over. So that kind of domain-driven design thinking came out of the first session, and then the Sunal's session where she was talking about trying to figure out the right problem and analysing the problem before you break things down. So I think there's just a lot of solidifying of good ideas.
I felt that they did a really great job of weaving the cohesive theme through all of the talks today, particularly around decision making.
Yeah, and for me, decision making is something I definitely struggle with. The decision paralysis, and then also the post-decision regret is something I'm always kind of overthinking things afterwards.
What was your biggest surprise or most eye-opening learning or takeaway from today?
I don't think there was any big eye-openers, but like I said, just solidifying ideas and giving me different maybe paths forward for the ways that I think about things that I already know I struggle with. So
that's great. So you feel like you're taking away actionable insights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Kelly. And we'll see you back here next year, I guess.
Oh, excellent.
Cheers.
The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.